This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora koutou and welcome.
You stumbled onto Fix It Up Waitaha,
brought to you by the Eken Youth Rōpū, empowering young people across the plains.
If you're passionate about our gorgeous environment, get ready for a killer show.
So, Poppy, I've got a question for you. If you had to learn a language, what would it be?
Ooh, I learned a bit of French for a time, but that didn't last. The only thing I know how to say is I like to play sport on the weekend after an entire year of French. That's all I retained. I would love to be fluent in Te Reo Māori, and then maybe Spanish at some point. not one language, but I think it would be really, really cool to maybe be multilingual at some point, fluent, which would be awesome. What about you, River?
Oh, that's really hard. Te Reo would be cool, but I don't think I'm going to stay in New Zealand for very long. Sorry to all the Kiwis out there. I think I'll go Italian would be pretty cool. Because I learned a bit on Duolingo, but then gave it up, as you do.
Duolingo carries the language learning. One day we'll actually end up in the countries, and that will be amazing. But for now, the green dancing bird is where it's at. Would you like to travel?
Oh, I can't wait. As soon as I leave high school, I'm backpacking around the world. That's my big plan.
Awesome.
And so during the holidays, did you do anything really interesting?
Gosh, I went mountaineering for the first time, which was lovely. And there's no snow, so we just kind of went up. There was a little bit on the peaks, and I learned how to walk safely on mountains when you don't know if you're going to fall or not. It wasn't a dangerous space, but it was good to get those techniques in. What about you?
Yeah, I went to Adrenaline Forest, which is awesome, with a mate, which is great fun.
Oh, Adrenaline Forest is so cool. I had a teacher who helped to put that up, and it would be like a roll of the dice who got to test the courses. So, you know, they'd put down a safety mat maybe, and then they would sort of just like launch themselves at these courses and see how it went. So lots of face smacking right into trees.
Oh, gee. Wow, you've got to be brave to do that. This week's new segment in Canterbury is Titiriti training. I heard you went to that. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Not really broad Canterbury news, but over the holidays, the Eken Youth Rōpū had the opportunity to go to a Titiriti training through Environment Canterbury, I believe. It was about nine or ten of our Rōpū members and then a bunch of members of other youth councils around Waitaha. So we had Kaikōura Youth Council, we had Christchurch Youth Council. That was really awesome, just as a networking event. And I'd never been to a training like that. For those of you who don't know, it's essentially learning about the treaty documents and how they were set out, how they were then basically ignored until recently, and how New Zealand might have looked like if we had upheld those documents from the very beginning. I found it amazing. I think a lot of people in our Rōpū found it amazing. Some had been to trainings before, lots hadn't. If anyone has a chance to go to one, I would highly, highly recommend. I hope to go to more. Left with so many thoughts and so much realization on how little New Zealand history we learn. I think lots of people now do learn the very basic information on Te Tiriti, you know, when the documents were signed, who they were signed by, maybe a little bit of information on that. But I had no experience throughout my years in intermediate, in high school, all of that. I had no learning on Te Tiriti. So that was pretty confronting to realize that our schooling system is still not teaching a lot of New Zealand history. Highly, highly recommend anyone who has the chance to go to one of these trainings, please take it. It's an incredible opportunity.
And what would New Zealand look like nowadays if they actually had listened to what they wrote?
Gosh, it's hard to know. A lot of conversations that came up within Aorōpu was, would we have a far better treatment of our environment, I'm sure. I think there would be a lot more use, you know, when we decide what trading New Zealand is going to be focused around, we possibly would have gone towards much more horticulture, growing in the ground rather than focusing on cattle and dairy farming. I think it would be a lot more of shifting our farming to fit the land rather than our land to fit the farming. That's a really interesting thing in terms of economy. I think there would be a lot more equity. Maybe the women's rights movement would have been brought forward a few years. That was in the late 1800s, I believe. Just a lot of differences. And I think it's really inspiring to look at what New Zealand would look like now, because it also shows what we can look like in the future and what we will look like in the future if we and when we uphold these treaty documents.
Yeah, that's amazing. Just thinking about, because New Zealand's such a, well, especially on the international scale, New Zealand's seen as such a progressive country, right? But there's still lots of stuff wrong with our systems.
And you have an interview coming for us. What have you spoken about?
I guess we'll see, hey? A little bit of a surprise.
Also, more news. Dude, the weather today?
I know, I was actually terrified of how warm it was. Middle of winter, at night. Shouldn't be that warm. And there's no snow on the mountains. No one's snowboarding, no one's skiing. It's actually really scary. Climate change is here. It's here now.
Oh my goodness, yes. The daffodils in Hagley Park have been up for at least a month now. That is, what's happened to winter? Where is winter? This is spring weather. I'm loving it from a, like, wow, I'm warm sort of perspective, but it's terrifying.
Yeah, and then in the northern hemispheres, like Asia, Europe, America, temperatures were skyrocketing, like 50 degrees. Like, it's insane. Really, really scary. All the predictions are coming true this year, this winter.
It's been so, so hot. California's Death Valley, which I believe is that really, really hot valley in the United States, it broke records for daily temperature. It was the hottest July 16th recorded ever, I believe, at 128 degrees Fahrenheit, which I just gave a quick Google, and that is 53 degrees Celsius.
Well, yeah, humans can't survive in 50-degree heat for long. 53 degrees is really, really pushing it.
Pretty confronting.
G'day, everyone. Welcome to this week's interview. I'm here with Stacey Tupoho, and we're going to be talking about the relevance of the environment to mana whenua. So how's your week been? What's going on?
Yeah, you know, same stuff, different day. Just been chilling out at home today, even though I was meant to be at work, but that's the way it is. And obviously, I've just gotten back from Lake Takapo as well, where we spent the weekend amongst whānau celebrating Matariki, which was beautiful. And being able to do that in the space where our tīpuna were able to do it is something that I think we as kaitahu, kati mamue and waitaha, we all seek to try and build that knowledge, but also build that experience to be able to celebrate these sorts of things. That was my week, weekend and all. It's been beautiful.
Nice. That sounds awesome. You've brought a song in today, I believe?
Yes. A song that I truly enjoy every once in a while. So it's I'm in Love, I Want to Do It by Alex Gudino. So classic one from the early 2000s, but beautiful song.
Great, can't wait to hear it.
Oh,
So what is your role in the EYR?
So I was appointed as a mana whenua representative, representing mana whenua here in Waitaha, but particularly my hapu of Kati Huikai, Kati Mako, Kati Irakehu, Kati Whiriki and Kaitua Huriri. However, I was also elected as the co-chair mana whenua, which is a first. So at the start of the term, we obviously made the decision to have co-chairs, but then to have one of those co-chairs be a mana whenua representative and be mana whenua to allow for the tino raka te rataka to be maintained as a rōpū and to show that mana whenua are a key part of what we do. However, I look at my role as more of a mentoring / guiding role rather than just a co-chair role. And for myself, it's about trying to ensure that we give every young person that is on the EYR the opportunity to express their raka te rataka, their leadership as a young person here in Waitaha, but to also develop that and develop the mana and the mauri that they have when they move into different roles. And I guess a big part of that is looking at what you and Poppy have done with the show and the fact that you know that me and Alice have both had full faith in you both to do as you please and will continue to do so. And so, yeah, it is about being more of a mentor and someone to guide than it is to just be a co-chair.
Yeah, sweet. Thanks for that. That's a great answer. What is the significance of the environment, Te Kaitahu?
Te Taiao is essential to how we as Māori actually work, but particularly for Kaitahu Kati Mamoe and Waitaha. Throughout our history, Te Taiao has been so critical, particularly the moana, and particularly the likes of our mahi kakai, so the collection of our kai and the oceans. So currently all of our settlements, bar one, Runaka or Hapu, sit on the coast. The only one that doesn't is Hokonui Runanga or Runaka, and they sit in Gore, which is down in Southland. Now, it has meant that we've had a big reliance on kai moana, but also on the manu around the area. But particularly, Kaitahu has had a really strong connection with the wai, with the water. And so we always seek to do what's best for the water and the wai, but also what's best for Te Taiao in general. It is a core part of who we are. Our story is that we begin in Te Taiao and we end in Te Taiao. Our bodies begin their journey with Te Taiao and being nurtured and everything by our māma. And then obviously they're eating kai from within the grounds and all. And so for us, we want to build that strong connection from the beginning of our lives, before we are even out of the womb. And then on the opposite end of the cycle, when we pass away and we go through the takihaka process and our putaputawaki and our journey to Te Waka o Rehua, when our bodies are buried, we are gifting our bodies back to Papatuanuku and to the atua who have gifted us the thing of life. And so when our souls begin that journey, Te Taiao is always a part of that because it is our beginning and it is our end. And so for Kaitahu, that is how significant it is. It is an essential part of who we are, and it always will be.
That's really, really amazing. That's really cool. Bonus extra question here. When you guys pass away, and that belief, is that for burials, is that in lakes normally? Because I'm pretty sure Lake Teka, like, that's where you were, right?
So, not anymore. So, it was, so back pre-colonization, obviously, there were cases of cannibalism and all of that sort of stuff. And so Māori lived by the basis that the worst way to die was to be eaten by your enemy. And so for many, there were a mix. So you could be buried via the land, via the whenua. However, Lake Takapō, via Waitaha particularly, but also I believe through Kati Mamoe, was used as a sacred place to burn and bury our tipuna via fire as such. And so what we would do is we would mourn their loss on the beautiful wee island of Motuariki, which is in the middle of Lake Takapō, and we would push our whānau out, and we would light them, or we would light them alight on the waka thereon, and they would burn and eventually sink to the bottom of the awa of the roto. And so, yes, Lake Takapō is a very significant place, particularly for Kati Mamoe and Waitaha whanauka. But, yes, it could be a mixture of ways. These days, that never happens. We always do it the way of burying people in our urupa.
That's really cool. And as a young kaitahu, what is your vision for the environment in Waitaha?
For myself, my hope is that we can restore Te Tai Awa to its original, or close enough to its original status that we can start to use it again for our kai, for our tamariki and mokopuna to be able to swim in those lakes, for us to be able to practice wakaama and all those sorts of things in our roto, in our rivers, in our moana, but also for our species, whether they be manu or ika or whatever animal it happens to be. We want to, or for myself, I want to ensure that Te Tai Awa is up to the standard that we can allow for all of these species, as well as us as takata whenua and takata tiriti, to be able to thrive and actually enjoy Te Tai Awa in the way it is. I also think, though, that we need to gift back whenua to Te Tai Awa. And I think that will come with time. But there is the fact that we have all these different situations going on with the likes of Cyclone Gabrielle and all of these different things, where Papatua Nuku and Raki Nui and all of our atua are clearly stating, just remember who has control. And so for us, it is about recognising that we are going to have to sacrifice different things, whether that means we have to sacrifice houses and different buildings and all, then that's the way it is. And I think for myself, the vision I have is that, yes, we'll be able to live coinciding with Te Tai Awa, but also live amongst it and live with that connection with Te Tai Awa, and in a way that we will be able to thrive as mana whenua, as takata whenua, but also as takata tiriti and as Pākehā. And anyone that comes to Aotearoa would be able to thrive with Te Tai Awa, and we need to look at a way that we can become a Te Tai Awa-centric Aotearoa. Not just a Te Tiriti centric, a Te Tai Awa centric. So,
I think that's actually a really, really good point. Mm-hmm. And now, leading on from that, do you think Ngāi Tahu are being consulted enough and being involved enough in these projects to protect the environment?
No, I don't. And look, the relationship that Kai Tahu has with many of the different councils, local government authorities, central government authorities, cool, they're there, but they're not up to scratch. And I think the other thing is that there is a clear disregard by local government and central government agencies of it's a hapu-centric side of things. But particularly the fact, and I'm going to call them out here, the likes of Kaitua Huriri, who have claimed mana whenua over lands that are not actually theirs, and given histories and whakaaro on things that are wrong, I think as mana whenua, but particularly as someone who whakapapas not only to Kaitua Huriri, but also to other runaka, particularly Kati Huikai and Kokararata and Kati Whiaki e Rāpaki, I think there is a clear disregard of the mana that we actually hold on the other side of these of the hills here in Ōtautahi. And I think that shows a clear disregard from not only central government authorities but also local government authorities that they are not willing to build relationships with all of mana whenua. If you've got a relationship with one, kapai, we'll just go through them. That needs to change, and there needs to be a real in-depth but also just blunt conversation about actually who is truly mana whenua and who actually holds the right mana to represent certain points. And the best way to put that is I currently live up the road here within Puari Pa, which is a pa site that was in Ōtautahi, and that's actually one of my tipuna from Kokararata, has no relation to Kaitua Huriri, and yet Kaitua Huriri are the ones who have made the kōrero on that. So there are very, very much in a hapu things that are going on, but I think if we're going to talk about consultation, we need to talk about the lack of regard from central and local government agencies to talk with all hapu, not just the one they've got a relationship with.
Yeah, because they're basically saying, look, we're working with these guys, so that's all we need to do, right? Like, that's we're good, we're working with mana whenua, but really they need to recognise all the different hapus that are, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And in all honesty, we will get there eventually, but there are going to be some very difficult conversations, and that's not just for central and local government. That's also from a hapu to hapu level, and I think we'll get there. But it will require some very difficult conversations.
And on that happy note, thanks for coming in, Stacey. Thanks for letting me interview you. It was great to have you here. Thank you for listening to Fix It Up Waitaha, coming to you from our beautiful Ōtautahi Christchurch.
We'd love to hear what you're getting up to in your own spaces. Follow along or send us a message at Ekan Youth Rōpū on all social places. That's ECAN Youth Rōpū, and listen again every second Wednesday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your audio.
And we hope you get out and do your part to fix it up.
Once upon a time, our earth was fine, and it orbited harmlessly without a crime. But millions of years ago, humans did.